EdSearch versus Roque Espinoza, Mr. McGowan.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Counsel, the only question in this case is, does Mr. Roque Espinoza establish a fair and just reason to withdraw his guilty plea? In this case, he pleaded guilty to an illegal reentry after deportation. His stated reason was innocence. The basis for that reason was that the Supreme Court, between the time that he pled guilty, between the time he was sentenced, decided in St. Cyr that aliens who pled to an aggravated felony were eligible for discretionary relief from the administrative law judges and from the administration for deportation hearings. That was directly contrary to what Mr. Roque Espinoza was told at his deportation hearing.
But he had the opportunity to appeal and could have done the same thing that St. Cyr did. And in analogous situations, such as the endless line of Apprendi cases we look at, we see other people who could have made similar arguments, and when they fail to do so, we evaluate these things only under plain error. We don't let people just raise them because it's a new argument. And I don't see why that fact, the fact that he was certainly given the opportunity to appeal, he could have challenged the IJ's, what turns out to be mistaken understanding, on appeal, and for all I know, the Supreme Court might have taken his case. Why doesn't that take him outside the scope of Mendoza-Lopez and St. Cyr and leave him, particularly since he's only saying he missed this discretionary opportunity, why doesn't that leave him where he is?
Your Honor, I believe that Mendoza-Lopez states that the question is not whether they could have appealed or did appeal. To whether they actually knew that they had the right to appeal.
But he did know he had the right to appeal. He didn't think it was going to do him any good. But, you know, lawyers take appeals all the time where they're urging a different understanding of the law. And, of course, the higher up the ladder you go, and if you get all the way to the Supreme Court, you can tell them, as happened in the Bailey case, they're just reading this statute wrong.
I understand that that he could have done that at the time. However, of course, the administrative agency would have appealed to would have denied it on its face.
Sure. Then he would have come to the Court of Appeals.
He would have come here, and in this court, it's my understanding at that time, had one exception whether the administrative law judge had discretion, and that exception was whether the person had a claim of innocence that they did not rely on in reliance of their ability to waive for the administrative law agency to waive the person's ability to be deported.
But of course, we eventually decided the Gideonwo case, which also deals with retroactivity. I mean, I'm not sure we would have been such a stony face.
Your Honor, I don't know what would have happened, and you're right. The Gideonwo case is a very important case at this point, especially given the government's letter containing its new case from the Fifth Circuit. But I still believe that the question is not whether he could have; it's whether he knew he had the ability to knew that he could.
Well, knew what? He knew he could appeal. He just didn't know that if he did appeal, he'd win.
One of the problems we have in this case is that there were tapes, evidently, of these hearings that were provided to defense and the government. I did not represent him below, so I don't know what those tapes indicated. But one of the questions I have, looking at all the record in this case, is what the administrative law judge told him about his right to appeal. He hadn't a right to appeal under the statute. And the courts, this court, including the Supreme Court, has later determined that, well, there's in this case, the St. Cyr case actually decided that they did have the ability for relief from deportation. But the Supreme Court's also ruled that there's 2241 possibilities. But that's after the fact. This is all after he was before the administrative law judge. And so I really don't think that it makes any difference whether he had a lawyer, whether he was told he could have appealed, although I'm interested in what the administrative law judge would have said about that, since under the statute he didn't have a right to appeal. And this gets to the merits.
It's really all about retroactivity, though, isn't it? Because had his case been finished as of 1994, he would have known that he could seek discretionary relief anyway, and I'm
exactly.
trying to pick a year early enough. But so the, it's really about whether the IURA changes were retroactive or not.
Exactly. That's what St. Cyr decided, and decided that it wasn't.
The IJ thought they were retroactive, and actually a lot of people thought they were retroactive.
Well, when you redirect, it says that they're retroactive. But as I said, the issue probably is not whether he had the right to appeal, and we're not arguing that.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is his understanding at the time, and I think the fact that there was no evidence or hearing below causes the problem that we face right now, because essentially this is a question of the element, the substance of the claim for innocence. We're right here basically to see, to argue that the district court should have allowed him to withdraw his guilty plea to be able to go forward with it.
Given the Fifth Circuit's analysis in the Lopez-Ortiz case, which you mentioned, you know, how does that change your view? I mean, and how does that help you to show that the removal hearing was fundamentally unfair?
Your Honor, I would specifically note that through some prescience, the attorney who wrote this appeal, the response, cites Didiwano for the very purpose that I would be citing it today. This circuit has said that there's a due process violation if at the administrative law judge hearing the person was denied discretionary relief. And so one of the differences between the Fifth Circuit and this circuit is that there are circumstances under which an alien has a due process right even at that other hearing. We're talking about a step further, though, the government being able to bring, as an element to an offense, a criminal offense, a determination of deportation that was decided in front of an administrative law judge, where there's no rules of evidence, the standards are lower, et cetera. I'd also submit that the Fifth Circuit's opinion in Lopez-Ortiz really contradicts Mendoza-Lopez. I mean, the facts are almost the same, but the conclusion's different. And I really can't reconcile them, looking at them both. Finally, it's based on an assumption that St. Cyr is simply a statutory interpretation, which it is not. The retroactivity analysis is really a constitutional evaluation of whether the statute as it was drafted was constitutionally applicable to people and could be retroactive. So I don't believe it's simply a statutory interpretation, and for those reasons, I don't believe that the Fifth Circuit's opinion comports with the Supreme Court's opinion, and it is different than this circuit's. I would reserve the rest of my time for...
Okay, thank you, Mr. McGowan. Mr. Boris?
May it please the Court. The District Court properly denied the defendant's request to withdraw his guilty plea because he failed to establish any fair and just reason to do so. First of all, the defendant cannot collaterally attack his deportation order because he has not shown that he was ever deprived of judicial review of that order. Secondly, even if he could collaterally attack that order, the collateral attack would be unsuccessful because he has not shown that his deportation proceeding was fundamentally unfair.
But here's my question for you about that. I certainly understand that the relief he's asking for is discretionary, but we quite regularly say it's one thing to complain about the way discretion was exercised, but it's quite another thing to say that somebody didn't realize that there was discretion out there to be exercised. We say that in conjunction with parole boards. We say that in conjunction with sentencing decisions. If the district court didn't realize, for example, that it had discretion in a particular area of the sentencing guidelines, we'll say, well, that was an error of law. We'll send it back. For all we know, the district court may exercise its discretion in a way that's consistent with the earlier sentence. And so what he missed was the opportunity to have the Attorney General exercise that discretion, which might or might not have happened in his favor. Nobody would ever know. So it seems to me there is something very fundamental in there that he missed if we get over the appeal hurdle of your first point.
Well, there are multiple points. The first point is the only reason he missed it is because he failed to do what St. Cyr did and seek judicial review and get another opportunity. It would have presumably been remanded, and he could have, prior to deportation, he could have had his opportunity to have a shot at that discretionary relief. But as to the second point, as the Fifth Circuit has held in the Lopez-Ortiz case, All that was required at that proceeding, the defendant has cited no procedures that were unfair.
But I see this, the Fifth Circuit overlooked the point that I'm trying to make right now. The Fifth Circuit just said, oh, it's discretionary, so there can't, there's no due process right to actually having the relief ordered. But I don't, I think that what he's trying to say is that you do have a due process right to have the whole set of remedies considered.
Well, I think the Fifth Circuit case in Lopez-Ortiz is entirely reconcilable with this circuit's decision in Gideonwa. They cite Gideonwa, and I think, and I hope I'm addressing your point, Your Honor, they cite Gideonwa, well, for the proposition that the retroactive application of a statute deprives the defendant of due process. The government reads that case to hold that the retroactive application of a statute deprives the defendant of due process only if it results in a manifest injustice, is what the court said. In Gideonwa, the manifest injustice was the fact that the defendant had made a substantial showing that he had pled guilty to his underlying felony in reliance on the availability of that discretionary relief. The interest that was protectable, that the Seventh Circuit was protecting, was the benefit of the bargain from that plea agreement, not this discretionary relief, which he may or may not get, which, as the Fifth Circuit has held, and it's cited to other circuit courts that agreed, that is something that's a matter of legislative grace. That's not something that's subject to due process protection.
But do you think, by that reasoning, that somebody who's properly preserved the point doesn't have any right to ask for that legislative, for that discretionary decision to be made by the Attorney General? The Attorney General could just say, well, I'm not taking requests for the first 6 months of 2003.
No. Well, certainly, had he sought judicial review at the time prior to his deportation, then it would have been remanded and he would have had his opportunity to make those arguments to the Attorney General for the discretionary relief. He failed to do that, and that's why...
No, I understand that, and that I think is an important point, but I guess I'm just concerned about some of the breadth of the Fifth Circuit's language, given the fact that this discretionary avenue is available and these other areas that I mentioned where we say to be deprived of all exercise of discretion is a problem.
Well, there's two elements. There's actually a third, too, that the Second Circuit in Gonzales-Roque held, that the failure to exhaust his administrative appeals itself is a third reason to deny the defendant's request. But what they held in there with the discretionary, because it's discretionary, it's a matter of grace, it's not a right that's protected. And therefore, there is no due process protection. It cited other circuits that are all of the same holding, and the defendant has cited no case to the contrary. It's ever, no circuit court has reached a contrary decision about whether or not that is protectable interest. So, turning back to the first point, it's important to remember that collateral attack is the exception, not the rule. You can only collaterally attack if you were deprived of the opportunity for judicial review the first time around. The defendant has not made that showing in this case. As I've said before, he could have done exactly what St. Cyr did. The defendant, at that hearing, it's agreed to in the record that the defendant was represented, he had an attorney, he was told that he had a right to appeal, and he said he would appeal. But for reasons that are not disclosed in the record, he failed to appeal. He wasn't deprived of judicial review, he simply failed to seek judicial review. And that's why this case is like the First Circuit decision in Vieira Candelaria, which held that the defendant had not established that he was deprived of judicial review. And that's why this case is distinguishable from Mendoza-Lopez. In Mendoza-Lopez, it was a group deportation proceeding where the immigration judge required the defendant to exercise a waiver of his right to appeal. The defendant in this case exercised no such waiver. And the defendant in this case was represented. And in fact, he said he was going to appeal. But for reasons, there could have been a multitude of reasons why he decided not to appeal. And we don't know those reasons. They're not in the record. Turning to the second point, he hasn't shown that it was fundamentally unfair because he received fair procedures, all that was required at the Fifth Circuit held. He's not complaining he didn't have notice of his hearing. He had the hearing. He was represented. He had an opportunity to be heard. And although his immigration judge made a mistake in the law, it's not something that's uncommon. And it's certainly not something that rises to the level of making that proceeding fundamentally unfair. It was an error that was correctable on appeal, and the defendant failed to seek to correct it. And therefore, for all these reasons and the reasons cited in the government's brief, we would ask that this court affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barnes. Mr. McGowan, how much time do you have? 2 minutes? Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. My opponent referred a couple times to the appellate process that Mr. Roque Espinoza could have gone through, and it would have been remanded. Well, that's certainly not necessarily what would have happened. And I don't think that that's in the record or should be appropriate for this court to rely on.
Well, I don't understand. Are you saying that his appellate relief that he could have sought wouldn't have been adequate? Or?
It wouldn't have, certainly at the administrative agency level. And at this level, who knows what would have happened. He had a very similar claim to Giudicando, even though they came in very different...
Well, I don't understand. I mean, are you suggesting there's some blockage in the appellate process that justifies this proceeding?
I'm not criticizing the appellate process, Your Honor. I'm just saying that when he was advised that he didn't have the right to appeal, the statute said he didn't have a right to appeal, there was one case in this circuit where it was under very specific circumstances that it would be remanded. They had the right, not the right to appeal necessarily, but the right to discretionary relief. And so I don't know what the appellate process would have yielded in this case, and my opponent seems to rely on the idea that it would have been remanded. I don't think that's necessarily what would have happened. The Giudicando case is different in that that was a direct appeal from an administrative law judge's finding that he didn't have discretion under the circumstances. This is a case where it's different because we're asking to be able to draw the plea, and from a criminal proceeding where the government is trying to rely on the fact of deportation to increase what would be otherwise a misdemeanor to a felony. That's the difference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. McGowan, thank you to both counsel. And this will be taken under advisement. Court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.